Everybody should call in. We want everybody to call in. Phone lines are open tonight. All right, what do you say we kick this off, guys? We're going to do it. Welcome to the Boiler Room, the show that was dipped in pyroclastic magma, tempered with Thor's hammer and cooled in NASA-grade vats of industrial coolant just for all you rockers, rollers, resilient rascals, news nuts, savants, and also those guys that go the opposite way in the circle pit just to upset the conformity of it all. If you want to hang out with us here in the alternate current radio Boiler Room, bring something interesting to throw into the pit. We have a chat room for the live listeners, so as usual, please feel free to join the chat room if you're listening live on this Wednesday, December 30th, last show of the year. We got Spore in there monitoring the chat, and we've got the phone lines open, so if you want to call in, you can do that as well. You can go to alternatecurrentradio.com and check tonight's show post. The number is on it. I'll throw it out one more time here. If you want to call in, it's 218-936-0912, and the passcode is 379-457-pound. I'm your host, Hesher. This program is served up to you on a silver platter by the Alternate Current Radio Network, home of the Boiler Room, Sunday Wire, Corkscrews Twisted Mix, Anarchy with Spore, Hessian Session, and many more shows, and some new ones coming in 2016. So stand by. We got some big things coming up in 2016. You're going to be hearing about probably as soon as Sunday Wire or next week's Boiler Room are going to unleash a couple of new things for you guys to think about. We love talk radio over here. We love listening to it, creating it, doing political analysis, breaking down current events, following technology, pop culture, Or maybe I should say the decline of culture, since that's what we're bearing witness to on a daily basis. But we're also music heads over here, and Saturdays are reserved at ACR for enjoying music. So do come hang out if you're a rocker, a rapper, a jazz guy or gal, a metalhead, electrohead, or any otherwise leaning aficionado of music. You want to check out last week's new mixes by Spore and Corkscrew. Spore did Ladies Night in the Pit, which was badass. It featured Arch Enemy, Karen Crisis, OTEP, and many more. And this coming Saturday, I'm going to be doing a very special Motorhead episode of Hessian Session for the rockers out there, so don't miss it. R.I.P. Lemmy. Lemmy from Motorhead passed away this week, and I've been listening to a lot of Motorhead. A lot of Motorhead over here. That's what we were doing before the show. So, without further ado, let's jump into it. Tonight, in the Boiler, I've got Daniel Spaulding from souloftheeast.org. I've got Spore, host of Anarchy and of Boiler Room, and we may have a couple of drop-ins later. I'm not going to give any names out, but there's a good chance we'll have a couple extra guests joining us. So, how's everybody doing? Welcome to the show, Spore. How are you tonight?
I'm excellent. Happy to be here. I wouldn't like to be any place other than this on the last Wednesday of the year.
Right? This is a good one. Have we been doing this a year yet? Do you remember when we started? I don't think we've hit our year mark, but this marks the end of our calendar year here at Boiler Room.
Yeah, I don't think it's been a full year of Boiler Rooms yet.
Not quite. I think, when did we start? Like, maybe March?
I don't even know.
I think it might have been March. I'm not sure. It's just, it's like, it's ingrained now. It's just part of the week and something we look forward to all week long. And I've also got Daniel Spaulding here. Daniel, you have been here almost every episode, maybe even every episode this year, man. How you doing tonight?
I'm okay. I haven't been for every episode, but probably something like 75-80% of them, maybe.
The majority.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yep, definitely. So what's going on over there, man? It's New Year's Eve where you're at in South Korea.
Yeah, New Year's Eve, and I'm on vacation this week, so I'm sitting here with a nice cold beer.
Nice.
Excellent. Great, great. Well, hey, you know, we're ringing in the new year here, so that's how we're going to do it. So I'm not really sure where to start, you guys. I think I might want to beat up on old spokesperson Admiral Kirby. This did you guys see this one? Let me read this to you. I'll give you guys a quick little synopsis here. State Department spokesperson John Kirby is raising eyebrows after he released a recap of 2015 quote-unquote success stories in which he credits. Get ready for this. This is awesome. I laughed so hard. I almost fell off of whatever I was sitting on. He credits the United States for bringing peace and security to Syria and stepping up to help the country's people at a difficult time. Listen to this quote. The United States and many members of the international community have stepped up to aid the Syrian people during their time of need, wrote Kirby in his year in review released late last week. He went on to claim that, quote, the United States has led the world in humanitarian aid contributions since the crisis began in 2011. Oh my gosh, you just can't make this stuff up. Okay, so Kirby's claims of victory did not go unnoticed with foreign policy reporter David Francis, who wrote on Monday, when it comes to Syria, peace and security might not be the best choice to describe what the United States delivered in 2015. So, yeah, let's see. The United Nations Security Council reported in August that the Syrian conflict has now killed 250,000 people and displaced 12 million, according to a report released by the UN's Relief and Works Agency. In March, more than 80% of Syrians were living in poverty in 2014. What's more, despite the role of U.S. military intervention in fueling the rise of ISIS and conflict in Syria and Iraq, the American humanitarian response is severely lagging. The United States has just admitted that just 1,854 Syrian refugees since 2012, and according to the administration of Obama, 10,000 will be resettled next fiscal year. Now, I don't know about all that, but this Kirby guy has just been putting his foot in his mouth all year. Did you guys see the...
It seems to me that the Obama State Department has some of the stupidest spokespeople that we've seen in recent decades.
Oh my God.
I mean, I don't know. Do you remember what's her name? Harf?
Yes.
It was one of the women, they were bimbos that just would, they sounded like, you know, high school girls yapping away that had absolutely no clue what they were talking about. They were the ones that were there when MH17 was shot down over the Ukraine, and they were the ones that were trying to put forward the notion that just a few very dubious social media reports were enough to accuse Russia of being behind the shoot down of that plane. And now we have Kirby here, who's another, seems to me, a very idiotic man who has no grasp of reality. And it's just, I don't, where does Obama find these people? Where does John Kerry find these people? I mean, it's some of the stupidest, and obviously stupid in lying. I mean, they're not even good at lying.
No, they're awful at it. They're awful at it. Did you, let me play this clip for you, just so you and the listeners, you've probably heard this already, but for the listeners out there, just here's a little audio clip of, exactly what this Kirby guy is doing as a spokesperson for the White House. Talk about foot in mouth. Check this out.
RT's Guyana Chijikan joined the State Department press briefing to discuss Washington's position in the Turkey-Iraq dispute. However, U.S. officials were unable to answer some of her questions, accusing her of having an unprofessional attitude. Guyana shared her experience with us.
You have a situation where U.S. ally Turkey has deployed troops into Iraq without the permission of the Iraqi government. The Iraqi prime minister asked NATO to intervene and to put pressure on Turkey to get the Turkish troops out of northern Iraq. And this Wednesday, Turkey carried out airstrikes against Kurdish PKK forces in northern Iraq. And there is a real concern that Turkey is doing its own thing while using the fight against ISIL as a cover. I went to ask the State Department for the U.S. assessment of Turkey's actions. Take a listen.
Does the U.S. approve of Turkey's development of forces in Iraq without the permission of the Iraqi government?
I think we've dealt with this, haven't we?
Do you approve of it? Does the United States approve of it?
We understand that Turkey and Iraq are in a dialogue about this issue, and that we're encouraged by that, and we think that that's the right venue for this, is for the two countries to work this out bilaterally.
So from the U.S. government, we hear that it's up to Turkey and Iraq to figure out the situation with the uninvited Turkish troops. The U.S., though, takes upon itself to invite forces from other countries into Iraq and Syria. The U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter this Wednesday was telling Congress that he personally reached out to 40 countries to ask them to commit special ops and other support. The Iraqi parliament has expressed concern that Iraq may be losing a say in what countries it wants to cooperate with and what countries it doesn't, to the point that the Iraqi Parliament Security and Defense Committee is calling for the review or cancellation of Iraq's security agreement with the United States. I asked Mr. Kirby whether the U.S. addressed the concerns of the Iraqi Parliament Security and Defense Committee. Mr. Kirby said he was unaware of the committee's concerns, but then our exchange took an unexpected turn.
The situation where the U.S. invites forces to Iraq and the U.S. is leading this coalition, but when something goes wrong, the U.S. says it's none of our business, like with the Turkish troops, you have to figure it out between yourselves. Should it be of no concern to Iraq?
Again, another ridiculous question. When have we ever said it's none of our business?
You are saying that about the Turkish troops.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that, I'll say it again, okay, we want this to be worked out bilaterally between Turkey and Iraq. And the way you're trying to twist all of this around to make it look like we're doing something nefarious or that we're, you know, we've got some sort of inappropriate relationships here, I mean, it's just so silly.
Well,
and I can't believe, honestly, that you aren't embarrassed to ask these questions.
Should I not be asking that question? Exactly which question should I be embarrassed about, sir?
You can ask me whatever you want. I'm just stunned that you're not embarrassed by some of the questions you ask.
I notice that
RT very rarely asks any tough questions of their own government.
I do not expect the State Department to like my questions. In fact, I think the better the questions, the less they like it. But I also did not expect the State Department to say I should be embarrassed to ask my questions.
Okay, there you have it. That is the kind of crap that is coming
total
out.
Total deflection.
Of the White House.
Total
deflection.
That? Yeah, it's total deflection.
I mean, he pretty much...
Why doesn't RT ask its own government? Like, that's irrelevant to the conversation at hand. Even if we assume that RT doesn't ask its government tough questions, that has nothing to do with this particular incident.
Exactly. And he resorts to essentially ad hominem attacks, calling her silly and inferring that she should, directly saying that she should be embarrassed by pointing out a fact and asking a question. And I mean, geez, what is it degraded to now? Where do they get these morons? I shudder to think that this guy was an admiral.
Well, let's say these people, they live in a little bubble there in Washington, and they can't conceive that anybody would would reject their, what does Patrick call it, consensus reality. They can't conceive that anyone would reject this image of reality that they're projecting out onto the world. So of course they're going to act, especially a rather dull guy like Kirby here would react in such a juvenile manner because he has no ability to respond to any real criticism of his silly ideas. So he's just lashing out like a high school student.
What an embarrassment. What an utter embarrassment. I mean, and to claim that he has no idea this is going on right after Ash Carter has come out and said it like a day before. I mean, I don't know. I just found that to be hilarious and quite a win, actually, for anyone who's paying attention. You know, when you see a State Department official like that, spokesperson for the White House, and all he can do is have a little tantrum and throw insults around when faced with facts, you know, that says a lot. That really says a lot about where we're at right now.
Yeah, kind of dovetailing on that, I don't know if you saw this, I'm sure you probably did, but Russia has apparently taken out two of the major ISIS leaders, and the U.S. is condemning Russia for doing this because these ISIS leaders were possibly ready to talk about making peace.
just a correction. The guy that killed wasn't an ISIS leader. He was head of another Salafi terrorist group called Jaish al-Islam, which means Army of Islam. So ideologically, he's the same as ISIS, but he's not technically part of ISIS. But he gets his money from the same sources and promoted the same ideology that Islamic State, Salafi, Wahhabi State, Saudi Arabia-style Islamic sectarianism. And he was a guy who, and I can send you the links right away here, he was a guy who put Shiites and Alawites, who are the religious minority groups in Syria, he put them in cages, literal cages, women in cages, so that he could use them as human shields against the Russians and the Syrian military.
Wow.
And he has this guy that was killed by the Russians. He has videotapes where he's praising Osama bin Laden, where he's calling for all kinds of sectarian conflict against Shiites. So he was he's ideologically, there's no difference between him and ISIS and al-Nusra and all the other groups. But yet we saw not just the State Department, but Kenneth Roth of the Human Rights Watch condemning the, in my opinion, quite justified, killing of this terrorist leader.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he was on the path to talking about peace.
No, of course not. But he was doing the bidding of the Americans and the Saudis. So of course he's going to be recast as this moderate and this victim of the evil Assad and the evil Russians. Even though this character, I'm trying to recall his name, I should look it up. This character, he was formerly in a Syrian prison, and Assad released him. And it's now going around Twitter, the pictures. When Assad released him from prison, Kenneth Roth of Human Rights Watch condemned Assad. Oh, look, he's trying to release these Islamists to give the Syrian so-called Syrian rebels a bad name. And then when the Russians and Assad kill this guy, no, suddenly he's a victim. It's these guys like Kenneth Roth and the State Department there. They just, you know, flip around from one thing to the next. They don't even have any stable positions on these personalities. As long as they're killing Syrian soldiers, that's the big thing for them. They like them if they're killing and murdering Syrian soldiers. And I like the point that Patrick made recently on the Sunday Wire, is Assad is repeatedly being condemned when he kills these terrorist leaders, but you know, they're presented as opposition leaders. Patrick made the point, would the United States tolerate that situation in its own country? Would Washington tolerate armed militants that wanted to overthrow the government, bombing and shooting and killing people? Would they tolerate that and treat and expect that they have to treat those people as legitimate opposition?
But what if they're moderate? Maybe they're moderate.
Well, it's moderate. What does moderate mean in this case?
I mean,
it means doing the bidding of NATO. It's the,
Sounds like Russia liquidated one of their up and coming B or C or D list boogeymen to me.
Well, I mean, he was definitely a tentacle of the Saudis and by extent the Americans. So they lost one of their guys.
Yeah, and he was probably one of John McCain's good buddies. I know these guys. I know them.
Yeah, well, exactly. These are exactly the guys that are receiving weapons from the CIA, receiving funding from the CIA, receiving training from the CIA. Who do you think they're training? When they say, oh, we're training so-and-so, we're arming so-and-so, exactly who do you think they're training? It's not some nice, clean-cut, secular guy who's all about democracy and all about liberating the people from the from this. No, it's giving it to these jihadis and these Islamists, Muslim Brotherhood, Wahhabis, etc. That's who's getting this training. That's who's getting this money. That's who's always been the so-called Syrian rebels from the start. They've always been jihadists. There's never been any so-called moderates. They've always been jihadists, Wahhabis, Muslim Brotherhood, etc., headcutters. So there's never been some kind of nice secular shiny guys. And, you know, yeah, they have the guys that come on TV from the Syrian National Council or whatever, who are a bunch of doctors and technocrats that live in Europe and North America and haven't set foot in Syria in decades. But the actual guys on the ground, these rebel groups, they've always been jihadists from the very first day.
Absolutely, Daniel. I mean, geez. How many ways can this be pointed out just by following the current events? I mean, this is what we're seeing over and over again. And now we've got Turkey supporting ISIS. I mean, I cannot believe what's going on here. I mean, for example, this is another one off RT, and I know there's some people out there that are going to be like, those boiler room guys, they're just doing Russian propaganda. You know what? Bullshit. I'm just sitting here in America watching what's going on, and that old Russian propaganda line is very tired, very tired.
It wasn't Russia who obliterated Libya, Iraq, and Syria.
Nope, it certainly wasn't. It wasn't Russia who was complicit in the deaths of 3,000 of their own countrymen in false flag events. It's not Russia who are removing the rights from their people, destroying, taking their arms, ruining their rights. That's not Russia. That's what's going on right here where I'm sitting. And I tell you what,
even if we were to assume Putin is the nasty golem that they make him out to be, he's not projecting his power internationally. He's not trying to force regime change in numerous countries. He's not subverting governments in numerous countries. That's the United States. That's NATO. And it's exclusively the United States and NATO who are doing that.
Not to mention, it's our tax money that's funding this.
Yeah, good point. Good point. They take our money to wage these wars in foreign countries, to break treaties, to arm proxy armies, to disrupt legitimate governments, legitimate elected governments, and we're all just supposed to sit here and believe that that's not happening because an idiot like Kirby is up there doing what he does at the podium and trying to bash an RT reporter. I'm sorry.
And sadly, the majority of the public that sees something like that is not informed well enough to understand that we have not been creating peace in Syria. It's pathetic.
Yeah, or anywhere
where,
for that
where
matter.
Is this?
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, you look at just in the past couple of years, we've seen Libya, we've seen the Ukraine, we've seen Syria, we've seen Yemen, which is the United States is partially responsible for what's going on there.
Yeah,
so
what a mess.
Where is this peace? Where is this peace? Do the Houthis see peace? I don't think so. Do the Syrians? I think, you know, Kirby's talking about all the help that they've given the Syrians. I suspect at this point the Syrians would rather do without the Americans' help if this is what their help looks like. And if this is what American help and American peace looks like, imagine what American war looks like.
Oh my God! The freedom bombs. Bring the freedom bombs.
Yeah.
Oh, what a mess.
But we'll just be buried under the barrage of that rhetoric about barrel bombs and all that nonsense. Assad kills his own people, and Assad barrel bombs civilians. All these canards and you know, prefabricated talking points that are not based in reality.
Right, and some of them are so old and so long debunked, like the chemical attacks. I mean, we're still seeing people, like we've been covering the debates this year off and on, and we're still seeing people in debates talking about chemical attacks and barrel bombs when we know damn well that was not Assad.
But they know damn well that most people don't look beyond what they're getting from Fox and CNN, so they can still go run with those lies, even though if the person who takes an active interest in these things and just does a little bit of generic research would know that, yeah, the chemical weapons attack was a false flag. It's even reported in mainstream media outlets in America and Europe. But again, guys like these GOP guys like Christie and Ted Cruz and the rest, Rubio and the rest of them can just, probably not so much Ted Cruz, but Rubio and the rest of them can run with those lies. And people, especially your average GOP supporter isn't usually not particularly bright and is given over more to jingoism and those kind of things and projecting their legitimate frustrations and anxieties about their state of affairs, but have been trained to channel and direct their frustration on these abstract foreign enemies, especially Muslims and Russia and the Middle East, etc., where they can just turn all their rage and all their frustration about legitimate things, but instead of projecting it at those who have made their lives miserable and who are taking everything away from them, they project it on people who've done nothing to them and have no power over their lives.
Right, and the mainstream media, which Patrick pointed out on Sunday Wire, the mainstream media is completely, oh my God, he was comparing the budgets of the RT with the mainstream Western media, and it was like four times higher. I mean, you see all these, it goes all the way back years now, but I mean, you see these people like Hillary Clinton saying, oh, we're losing the information war. We need to put more money into the propaganda war. And they're putting, what was it, like $754 million into their mainstream news networks, which are run by, three or four companies?
Well, I would say if they're that worried about losing the propaganda war, they might want to start by firing Admiral Kirby, because he's not doing you any favors with his inability, inability to put forward any straight story. He's obviously a buffoon, so I'm not for helping them. But just as an aside, Hillary, if you're listening and you want to do better for your propaganda wars, get rid of Kirby would be a good place to start.
Seriously, what an embarrassment, man! I mean, even to the listener out there who might be a staunch Fox listener or GOP supporter, you got to be really embarrassed by that. You got to be really, really embarrassed seeing a spokesperson behave like that on the part of the government. I mean,
and then for him to say that Syria is a success. this is a guy through and through.
How is it a success when 80% of their people are living in poverty? How is it a success? How, I just don't get it. I mean, where does he get off?
It doesn't even matter what's really going on, because the general people just gulp it down and accept it as their reality. And they don't even look into anything. It's just like, oh yeah, we were creating peace all over the world. Okay, that's a good feeling. I'm just gonna go with that.
I do think a lot of people, there are a lot of people that are kind of jaded and cynical with that whole scene. But I think most people just kind of check out and think, you know, I can't do anything about it, so I'm just going to go about my daily life and my daily situation, which is understandable. But still, there's still too many people who who consume that garbage and really believe it. And if you look on social media, for instance, as far as that's an indication of anything, you see a lot of these people, these gullible people who really drink the Kool-Aid and really believe all that stuff that comes out from the White House, from the State Department, from CNN, to really buy into all of that.
Yeah, you made a really good point, Daniel. And I mean, well, you make several of them, and you have made several of them, but one of them that I was thinking about while you're saying it is that that a lot of people, you know, they just see headlines, they just go on about their daily things, you know, talk about what's going on in their neighborhood, drama or whatever, shopping or what's going on with sports, and a lot of people, I think, they don't even look at this stuff. It doesn't even matter what's going on in another country, whether their tax dollars are paying for it or not. They don't want to even look in that direction because it doesn't affect them directly in a way that they understand.
Well, I think people also feel kind of powerless, saying, what can you do? Voting, I think more and more people realize voting is a sham. No matter who you vote for, you get the same policies, you get the same oppressions domestically as well as internationally. You get the same situation, you know, there's some kind of cosmetic differences between the two parties, but when you get down to the nitty gritty, it's all the same. And I think a lot of people start to realize that. So they start to kind of despair and feel frustrated, and they don't know what they can do, so they just kind of check out.
What do you think is going to happen along those lines? I got a question for you. What do you think is going to happen when the next election cycle completes? Oh, what a melee that's going to be. What a wave of propaganda and head-fucking that's going to be. But I'm wondering what's going to happen when because right now, I mean, even the liberals are just kind of trying to sweep Obama under the rug. They don't want to talk about all the lies, all of the oppression, all of the executive orders, all of the death, all of the murder, all of the proxy armies. You know what I mean? Like, no, the liberals don't want to cover that. I think it's highly unlikely the GOP is going to take back over, considering what we've seen in the spectacle of debates. But Daniel, I'm curious what you think. Like, what's going to happen, say, in 2017, after whoever is voted in is voted in, and everybody who thinks that a little bit of a, you know, a facelift to the Democratic Party or a switch over to the Republican Party, however unlikely that is, yields nothing. Yields nothing once again. Yields more war, more financial collapse, more crony capitalism, more proxy wars. Are people going to, I hate the word, are people going to wake up a little more, or are they going to be, you know what I mean? Like, what do you see happening once the voting cycle ends and the new president comes in and everything is status quo and this machine just keeps churning, just this tank keeps crushing the skulls of everybody here and in foreign countries? Like, what do you see happening there? Is it just going to be, you know, more of the same? Is everybody going to go back to sleep, or are people going to get pissed?
I suppose it depends on who gets elected, but honestly, my gut tells me it's going to be Hillary Clinton one way or another, through hook or crook.
Your gut is telling you that?
I'm inclined to. I hope I'm wrong. I hope.
No,
again,
I mean,
it doesn't really matter.
Honestly, I was just thinking about this, and I was thinking, okay, I know a lot of liberal people. That's pretty much in my, you know, day to day life, who I know more than anybody else. I don't know a single liberal person that is going to vote for Hillary. But that being said, that does not mean I don't think she will be so-called elected, because this is all
that's
anyways.
That's what I mean by hook or crook. But I think you're going to see the GOP establishment do everything within its power to obliterate Trump. You know, whatever one thinks about Trump, I do believe the establishment doesn't like him and wants to get him out of the game. And I think they'll use whatever underhanded means necessary to do that, even if it goes all the way to the convention and they have to deny him and get their own puppet candidates, be like Rubio or whatever, Bush or whoever they decide that they can put forward as their puppet candidate. And so I think you'll have a weak Republican candidate, and so Hillary will by default get that election. And I think as bad, you know, I'm not a fan of Obama, but as bad as he is, I think Hillary is going to be 10 times worse in terms of the interventions, in terms of pushing the surveillance state as far as she can. I mean, she's pure through and through establishment, in a way Obama never could be. You know, Obama, he's kind of just a go-along, get-along guy. He doesn't really, I don't think he really has any principles. He's just kind of a spineless guy who tries to cater to the establishment. But Hillary is the establishment.
Yeah.
Hillary is the establishment. So
for a long time now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Obama's just some kid out of nowhere. You know, but like you said, Hillary's been around for a long time, all the way back to when her husband was the governor of Arkansas. And she has establishment connections even before that. So, and she's made very clear that she wants to be as aggressive as possible in Syria, in the Ukraine, in several other so-called theaters of action. And so, honestly, I'm not, in the short term, at least next few years, I'm kind of pessimistic about what's going to happen, but I hope I'm wrong.
I think pessimistic is the perfect word for how to proceed for those of us that are paying attention. And I've got two clips here in line with what we're just talking about. I got one of Hillary, which is a compilation of her lies. I think a lot of people have probably seen this. It's been slightly viral amongst our circle. I'm going to play that. And then I'm going to come back and I'm going to play a Trump clip because it illustrates exactly what you were just saying, Daniel, about the GOP just or the establishment in general not going to allow Trump to proceed. But let's pick on Hillary first, all right? This is Hillary Clinton, a lying compilation. She says she was under fire in Bosnia.
I remember landing under sniper fire. There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles to get to our base.
And then they have video footage of her arrival.
Her arrival in Bosnia was not quite as dramatic as Clinton put it. Memory should always match the videotape. Cheryl Atkinson, CBS News, Washington.
All my grandparents, you know, came over here, and
turns out only one was an immigrant, three were not.
I'm very, very proud to state that I'm a full supporter of marriage equality. I believe that marriage is not just a bond, but a sacred bond between a man and a woman. I do not support gay marriage. The server contains personal communications from my husband and me. The server will remain private.
The only time I got on the internet, I did two emails. Otherwise, I didn't want to be one of them.
I have been a critic of NAFTA from the very beginning.
Except when she wasn't.
Frequent favorable comments about NAFTA, including this one in 1996.
Oh, I think that everybody is in favor of free and fair trade, and I think that NAFTA is proving its worth.
Participants in that event said, quote, her remarks were totally pro-NAFTA. And when Barack Obama sent out this mailer last month in Ohio arguing that Clinton actually supported NAFTA as First Lady, Clinton exploded, accusing Obama of dirty tricks.
So shame on you, Barack Obama.
Shame on you.
How dare you say what I said 12 years ago?
Is it me, or does she have the eyes of a lizard?
She has the eyes of Gollum.
If anyone's one of David Icke's lizards, it's her.
Oh my gosh, no kidding. So there you have it. I mean, just what more proof do you need? That's like, what, 2 minutes of just complete and utter contradictions proving that this woman will say whatever the political talking points are, whatever the popular political talking points are.
And another big piece of news in regards to Hillary this week is Trump bashing her on Twitter. saying, and I found this from 21st Century Wire, the title is Trump Hits Back at Hillary, Exposes Bill Clinton's Dodgy Record of Abuse Against Women. And Trump said in his tweet, Hillary Clinton has announced that she is letting her husband out to campaign, but he's demonstrated a penchant for sexism. So inappropriate. This is, I'm pretty impressed that Trump would say this publicly. I mean, there's all sorts of records about Clinton, Bill Clinton, and the way that he's taken advantage of women and abused them, and how Hillary's been kind of like right behind him covering up the details. And he's known to be like quite violent towards women, and she's always like right behind him covering up whatever sort of dodgy situation he was in, or outing people, so to speak, that he was involved with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can look up Larry Nichols, some of those Larry Nichols interviews, and say what you will about that guy. Definitely sort of a shady character, but from what I've heard, he's been involved in that camp, and some of his information is quite damning with regards to what you were just saying, Spore. And just to get back to Daniel's point. Go ahead, Daniel.
I was going to say, doesn't Bill Clinton give lie to the whole feminist narrative? I mean, they claim, these feminists claim so much to be concerned about the rape culture and the safety of women and the dignity of women. And yet the feminists are the first ones to go break bread with Bill Clinton and rally around him, even though he's by all, for all intents and purposes, a voracious sex predator.
Yeah, yeah, he got a cigar.
Well, it just shows that they're all about power. It's not about caring about women or the safety of women or so-called rape culture. It's just about power. So any man, as long as he mouths the right platitudes about feminists, he can do whatever he wants in his private life, and the feminists are okay with that because he's going to get them their piece of the pie.
Yep.
Yeah, and yep. Feminists' goal is to destroy culture, you know, and they've made great progress in absolutely destroying culture. And speaking of, let's get back to Trump for a moment here. I totally agree with what you were saying earlier, Daniel, about no one. They're just not going to let Trump in. And I've got an example of that right here. I've got another clip. Did you guys hear that Google has actually put out an extension that will filter out all online references to the presidential hopeful, Donald Trump? They call it the Trump filter. Google is actually throwing their hat in here and saying, hey, you know what? We don't like Trump. You shouldn't like Trump. Install this extension on your computer and you won't have to hear his crap anymore.
Wait, you're kidding me. Wait,
total Orwellian memory holes.
Right?
Wait, so people can electively decide to put a filter on their computer so that they can't hear about Trump?
Yes, and this is, you know, they make it sound like, oh, it's just a feature that we have for you should you want it. You know,
wow.
But it totally illustrates the power that Google has over your internet. I mean, just because people can elect to use this doesn't mean they aren't doing this on their own behind the scenes with certain topics.
Say it fits in with Patrick's thing there, the pre-traumatic stress disorder. You know,
yes.
Donald Trump is going to trigger me so I can get this filter and it will save me from having, you know, this traumatic stress disorder later down the road.
Yes,
I'm already triggered.
Yeah, his microaggressions will not be tolerated on my social justice computer. I'm going to let Google just block him out altogether. Listen to this. If you guys don't believe me out there, listen to this.
Donald Trump. If so, then a new Google add-on might be for you. The tech giant, for some reason, has released software enabling internet users to block any mention of the billionaire politician from their online experience. The so-called Trump filter can be downloaded from Google's online store. It'll replace any reference to the Republican presidential candidate with a blank space. However, the filter, though, can be adjusted so users can determine how often or how rarely Donald Trump shows up online. Let's have a look at why anyone would want to block the politician. Here are some of his better-known quotes.
On Mexican immigrants.
They're sending people that have lots of problems. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists.
And I would build the greatest wall you have ever seen.
Mexico's going to pay for the wall.
On McCain.
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
Me too.
On women, yeah. Me too.
You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals.
I don't frankly have time for total political correctness.
You PC, bro? On Muslims?
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
Well, Donald Trump's often controversial comments have even inspired a group of Americans to create a music video proclaiming how the Republican will make America great again.
Oh, this is gold.
And we'll make America great again with Donald at the wheel. And we'll bomb the hell out of everyone when Trump seals the deal. Fun of a crippled reporter. He'll make America great again.
We spoke to Richard Spencer, the editor of Radix Journal. He believes the Donald Trump filter shows the political head games at play leading up to the U.S. presidential election.
This is just a Google extension. I mean, people have, of course, the right not to read about Trump or not to read about baseball or whatever. So I would not classify it as censorship. I think it's actually more interesting on a psychological level. And that is that the media establishment wants Trump to just go away. And I think this Chrome extension is a kind of metaphor for their desire, because he's bringing up things. He's bringing things into politics that they don't want to talk about, that they don't want to deal with.
Okay, we're back. And he's right. The media establishment does want Trump to go away, I think. I don't know. There's definitely some...
Well, I was going to say that they play those little clips there, but they didn't play... They were carefully edited to put Trump in the worst light possible about Mexicans or Muslims. It doesn't show... First, it's about Mexicans. He talks about, I think most Mexicans are good people. They just take that one quote where he talks about rapists or about Muslims... They don't show they just show he wants to ban Muslims, but doesn't say until this situation is resolved. Again, I'm not condoning or supporting his statements, but they're clearly trying to take them out of context and clip them up to put them in the worst light possible.
Absolutely, and it's very similar to what you saw in 2008 and 2012 when Ron Paul was a presidential hopeful. I remember very specifically in 2012. When they started referring to Ron Paul as that guy who's like your crazy grandpa or your crazy uncle, you know what I mean? They try to downplay it and make it an emotional appeal to.
He's the cranky uncle at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, just dismiss that old guy. He's not from around here. He's not up on current times, so. You know, let's just have a very dismissive attitude about him.
And they would dismiss his foreign policy critiques as, oh, blame America first.
Yes.
Or, oh, he thought America got what it deserved or something. You know, the terrorists were justified, like completely misconstruing, distorting his arguments about foreign policy and issues like blowback and these kinds of things. You wouldn't get his actual words, his actual arguments. You just get this filtered, summarized version from some TV pundit, and you are supposed to accept that as the proper interpretation. And you get the same thing now with Donald Trump, where they tell you what he said. They don't show you the whole thing of what he actually said. They tell you, oh, he hates Mexicans, he hates Muslims. Again, whether I'm not a Trump supporter, so I don't feel I have to defend him personally, but just the tactics bother me, the deliberate distortions, that sort of stuff. I feel I have to point that stuff out because it's malicious and it's not fair to him, whether you like him or not.
Oh, absolutely. And they don't do that to Hillary Clinton. They don't do that. You don't see him doing that to Bernie Sanders. You don't see him doing that to Rubio or Cruz. I mean, you could do the exact same thing. I could sit here with my editing software and take things that those people have said out of context and make a similar collage. And when you start seeing these audio and video collages coming your way, that's how you know that the establishment media has an agenda. They're trying to brainwash you, and that's a perfect example right there.
And in the poor case of Rand Paul, they just ignore him.
Oh, man. Talk about marginalized. Oh, man. Rand Paul has been one of the only people that had anything good to say in these debates, and they just put him in a corner with a dunce cap on. I mean, they don't even have to go to the effort that they did with
him. Yeah, he kind of ghettoized himself, though. I mean, he...
Yeah, totally, I agree with you, Dan.
He has a terrible campaign staff. They should have fired him a long time ago. And he's gone... too many times he's tried to play footsies with different establishment opinions. It's clear he's not sincere about upholding their opinions, but he thinks, oh, if I kind of say something they like, they'll take me seriously, and they don't. They don't care. They see it as weakness, and they'll be even more dismissive of you.
Yeah.
He's a perfect example of a flip-flopper, in my opinion. Like you said, he says, whatever's good for the moment. But yes, I agree with you, Hesher. He's definitely been the only person that's been saying like a lot of stuff out during these debates that should be really recognized, and he's been totally blocked out, and that's the way the media works.
Yeah, he takes his dad's lead, and he's good with foreign policy. He'll make a good comment on foreign policy, but then they just, put him right back under the carpet again.
Well, I noticed that in terms of the all the candidates from both parties, you have only three who offer any real kind of major shift on foreign policy, those being obviously Donald Trump, Rand Paul, and to some extent Bernie Sanders. But you don't see their foreign policy ideas getting seriously discussed. They're just dismissed as either they're outright ignored, like Rand Paul, or the media works in overtime trying to dismiss them, like Donald Trump, or even Bernie Sanders. I think he doesn't get the same kind of treatment that Hillary Clinton does. He's kind of, he's just a cranky guy from Vermont. I'm not a Bernie supporter or a Trump supporter. I'm just trying to guess on a generic analysis.
We don't support any of these hosers at Boiler Room.
I just to make clear, I don't support any of the candidates whatsoever. But I am interested in seeing that their positions are treated fairly or represented correctly. And we don't have that. You have a media that will give cover to Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio because they're establishment darlings. But guys like Trump and Bernie or Rand, who do make some good foreign policy criticisms, good foreign policy points, they're just outright either ignored or treated as crazy, or the media just can't stand them and does everything it can to distract from actual positions they're taking to getting you lost in these silly arguments. Oh, Trump's a fascist. Trump's a racist. Bernie Sanders, he's a communist, or blah, blah, all these kind of silly things that A, aren't true, and are just B, utter distractions.
Isn't that like a bird's eye view of what it's like to be a president for the United States? Like, it doesn't even really matter what the president's point of view is or what their ideas of what their policies are going to be, because they don't actually have as much power as we all, or as the majority thinks that they have. They are, once they get that spot, it doesn't really matter what they said before or what their intentions were or could possibly be. They are pushed into one direction or another by who knows who, but it's not as it was said it was from the start.
That's absolutely right. I mean, you have I think Hesher mentioned a well-oiled machine earlier on, and that's what you have. So no matter who gets elected, you have these things going along that will keep going along.
Go ahead, Daniel.
No. I was going to say quickly. For instance, in my observation, I don't think Obama personally in his heart was necessarily on board with this Libya and Syria stuff. But that's what the establishment wanted. That's what the people in the State Department and the CIA wanted. And either because they have something on him or he's weak-willed or whatever, he just went along with it. Is that what's going to happen with the next president? Even if in their heart or in their mind they don't really necessarily agree with these policies, because there's just this wall that the establishment has that they can't break through this wall, and they just kind of have to go along to get along.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think that they have the power that they think they're going to have, and I don't think that they have the power that the people think that they have.
Absolutely, and if someone comes along and threatens that paradigm like Ron Paul, well, we know exactly what happens. Look at New Hampshire. You can look at when Bush won. Let's look at JFK. Good example, Daniel. I mean, that says it all right there. You get someone on the docket or in the chair at the White House who is not going to go along to get along, and they'll get killed, or they'll get their delegates locked out of the convention. I mean, they'll get the old black box voting will come into play. And even in Bush's case, when he loses, he wins. I mean, it's basically the political Wall Street. You've got power players who win whether their team is a winner or a loser.
Oh, you know, I'm glad you mentioned JFK, because he's the last president that I can think of that people, whether they're on the right or left or the middle, can collectively agree was the last good president. It doesn't matter if people were Democrats or Republicans. The majority of people think that he was the last great president. I guess from the people that I've spoken with, you know, I think that there is a reason that he was outed.
Right. And then we get these fake saints, you know, like, oh, well, you know, now that Reagan's dead, we can pretend that he's, you know, a total saint. And I think Patrick brought this up recently. They're going to do the same thing with Bush, you know. They're eventually, it's like right now, everybody's, you know, especially after the Bush administration, you know, everybody wanted to blame him for everything. Blame Bush. And now nobody wants to play that same game with Obama. So it's kind of just, you know, again, being swept under the rug. And maybe, just maybe one day, maybe 10 years from now, maybe 20 years from now, they'll be able to psyop the morons into looking back and calling Bush a great guy, you know, him and his dad, and maybe even his brother. What if Jeb takes over?
So was
Reagan. I mean, Reagan was a fucking moron, and now he's a saint amongst the GOP.
Reagan
wasn't even as conservative as they make him out to be.
Not at all.
He instituted new taxes. He did all these kinds of things. I mean, he did his own amnesty deal. So I mean, he wasn't anywhere near as conservative as the people at the National Review like to pretend he was. I mean, it's more of a myth than history.
Yeah, absolutely, Daniel.
Yeah, and we have all these people that are still big Obama supporters, and none of them, they're so against Bush. That was the guy that did all these horrible things, but they never even take a look at the fact that Obama's done things that are six times worse, you know. Peace and people safe and healthy, and I mean, it's amazing to me that they don't actually look at the facts and the records.
That's because people treat political parties now as they're the new substitute religions. Obama, he's not just a politician, or Bush, if you're a Republican. They're not just politicians. They're not just people. I mean, they're almost like kind of political demigods. They're imbibed with this sort of infallibility because they're a Republican or they're a Democrat. Or in Obama's case, he's black, so that gives him extra kind of divine status. And because of those things that these attributes they have, we can't question that. They're our gods, they're our saints or whatever you want to call them. And we just have to venerate them and revere them and listen to what they say from up there on the podium at the White House. and because that's kind of the equivalent of divine revelation, and we just go along with it. And the other guy, you know, because it's this Manichaean dualistic thing, so Bush is absolutely evil, Obama is absolutely good. Or if you're a Republican, Bush was absolutely good fighting terrorism, but Obama, he's a weakling, he's evil, he's a secret Muslim. And it just kind of this you know, this either-or narrative that you have.
Yeah, and that whole flip-flopping thing, flopping and flipping from right to left, it gives all the supporters of, we'll pick on the left right now since they're in the White House, all the supporters of them, well, they can blame all of Obama's difficulties and bad decisions and problems on Bush. They say, oh, well, this is all leftover Bush stuff. He got a bad deal because Bush left him a big shit sandwich in the White House to eat. Well, sorry, it's been 7.5 years, and if you look at the actual record, there's not a whole lot of Bush made me do it. But you're right, Daniel. I mean, they insert, it's almost like a reality television or a movie plot thing where they insert this dualistic bad guy, good guy sort of narrative. You know, it's like Joseph Campbell has written our political process. And as long as they can take these people and plug and play them into, you know, hero, anti-hero, underdog, you know, positions like this, mythological positions that invoke a certain emotional response amongst unintelligent people, they can carry this on for, you know, ad nauseum.
Exactly, because even though Christianity continues to recede as an influence in society, the archetypes remain.
Yes.
So you still have, you know, in Christianity you have this belief of God versus Satan and these kind of dualistic or semi-dualistic narratives. While those actual narratives have sort of receded, not entirely, but have for the most part receded. The idea of the light versus the dark, good versus evil, and these kind of archetypes remain in the consciousness, but they just put new figures to them. So instead of God versus Satan or something of that nature, now you have Democrats, which are good, versus the evil Republicans, or vice versa, Republicans who are good versus the evil Democrats and the Muslims.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of narratives that sort of have taken place in people's consciousness as the old religious beliefs recede to the edges of society and recede to the edges of consciousness. The actual archetypes, though, remain.
This Justin from the Boiler Room chat, let Daniel know his analysis while drinking Korean beer is excellent.
That's right. That's right. This is the New Year's episode. And you know what, Daniel? You're right. It's absolutely like, and now that we're up to what? Now that they've perfected the Star Wars universe and they can just regurgitate old plots, and people are so involved with the reality television paradigm of politics and life, it just becomes that. It becomes a sixth grade mentality of dark side versus light side, depending on, you know, if you're in the right or the left. Or the middle right, or the middle left, or the extreme right, or the extreme left. You've got your whole Joseph Campbell setup of characters there. You've got your outlaw, you've got your renegade, you've got your hero, you've got your anti-hero. They're all there for the viewer to just insert into their comic book level interpretation of reality in a false dualistic paradigm where no matter which side you're on, they're out to screw you.
Oh yeah, all the while everybody's liberties are getting taken away. I mean, I could start off a list, but something that just recently happened in Texas a year ago, I'm not sure if it was just a certain part of Texas, but they made it illegal to feed homeless people.
Oh, yes. This was near Dallas, I believe, right?
In a suburb of Dallas. And this is something that people like to do on their holidays is, you know, it makes them feel good. They're helping people out. They want to go out there and feed the homeless and give them, you know, warm clothing and sleeping bags and things like that. And it was outlawed in Texas. And I about a week before Christmas, there was a group of people that wanted to feed the homeless and provide them with things to keep them comforted, and they went out, even though it was illegal, and they went out bearing their arms, brandishing their arms, which, you know, is a touchy subject. But apparently they went out there and they had food, they had sleeping bags, they had clothing, and they went out there and they fed the homeless and gave them clothing and comfort and warmth. And the police did stop by and try to stop them and make them fill out a bunch of forms, and they said no and went on continuing to do what they did, and the police backed off. And I think that's a pretty neat story. I'm not sure what my views are on brandishing your weapons. I don't think that's usually a necessary thing to do, but apparently it worked in this situation.
Absolutely. It's a great example. I'll read from the Daily Sheeple here. Well-armed activists openly defy Texas law to feed the homeless. When feeding the homeless becomes an act of civil disobedience, Americans have been asleep for far too long. Luckily, however, there are still good people who are willing to defy such arbitrary and ill-conceived laws and ordinances. The folks over at the aptly named organization Don't Comply took to the streets just outside the Austin Street Shelter in Dallas this weekend to perform what has now become a revolutionary act, feeding the homeless. We are not complying with a bad law today, Matthew Short, PR director of Don't Comply, said. Evidently, the city of Dallas believes that it's wrong or bad or unlawful for us to feed more than a certain number of people at a time. But during Christmas, we want to show our love to the community and give these people a chance to survive the winter, whether it be with blankets or coats or just giving them a holiday party like today with all kinds of cookies and goodies, turkey and dressing, and the whole nine yards. Last December, the Dallas City Council enacted Ordinance Number 29595, which makes it illegal to serve food to the homeless without jumping through a statist myriad of bureaucratic hoops, including a fee, a training class, and written notices. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Wanting to help someone out who's starving and having to pay a fee to do so, go to a class, and provide written notices.
Can you believe this? This is outrageous. I mean, I when I was reading about this, all I could think about was going to the zoo and don't feed the bears, like, or don't feed the monkeys. You know, I mean, are homeless people like animals now that you can't provide something to them that they might need in
what
a desperate
is this,
time?
Like, well, is this like India? Are they the untouchables? Are we in a caste system here now?
Spore to the establishment. We're all animals.
So. That's true. Good point.
Yes, and they're clearly trying to thin the herd here by not letting us look out for our fellow human beings. I mean,
well, it's just them trying to say, you can't do anything unless we give you permission. You can't feed the homeless. You can't collect rainwater. You can't have a garden in your front lawn. You can't do this, or you can't do that.
You can't call somebody by the wrong gender.
Yeah, you can't call Caitlyn Jenner a he. You know, you can't do any of those things. We tell you what is reality. We tell you what you can and cannot do. We are the overlords, and that's the final, you know, that's the final statement. That's how they expect things to go.
Unbelievable. Is that even, I just heard this week that, I haven't fact checked this one yet, but I read something about in New York, you just referenced it, Spore, if an employer refers to someone as a gender other than the one that they prefer, regardless of, you know, what their actual chromosome level is, that employer could be charged $250,000 in damages.
It's not, you don't have to be an employer to get charged that. In New York, you can be charged $250,000 if you're a property owner. So anybody that owns property can be charged that much. And small business owners can be charged $125,000. So if you refer to somebody that you're confused by as a he or she, when they think that they are not a he or she, they can be fined up to $250,000 at the lowest point, $125,000. This is, is this not a total breach of the Constitution and freedom of speech?
Does that money go straight to Bruce?
But, I mean, Spore, come on, the Constitution is long dead. I mean, I'm sorry to say it, but it is.
That's a good point. I mean, we can hardly appeal to the Constitution anymore at this point. It's been completely turned into a dead letter. A toilet rag. Yeah.
It's a dead letter at this point. The Republicans talk, we need to go back to the Constitution. You know, they aren't even sincere about it, but we need to go back. But it's dead at this point. I'm sorry to say it is. I mean, there's no freedom of speech is on its last leg. You no longer have, the Fourth Amendment might as well not even exist. A myriad of other amendments, they don't mean anything anymore. I mean,
it's been dead since the Act of 1871. Look up the Act of 1871, look up your history, and somewhere between the Act of 1871 and the establishment of the Federal Reserve, you will see that our Constitution has been
gone. But even all the other stuff is now kind of peeling away. It's, leaves in the wind at this point.
They have people believing that it's just, an old, archaic document. It's something that old, crazy Uncle Ron Paul keeps in his briefcase. And, it doesn't have anything to do with, contemporary times. And it's about muskets. And, this is a PSYOP that has been successfully completed. And now no one values that.
But a constconstitution is only as good as the people that adhere to it.
That's kind of why I brought those things up is that, we have this process where we, supposedly elect officials, to represent us and they bash everything that they said that they were going to do and then we have what's happening on the underlying territory is we have bills and statutes and different things that are completely cutting out all of our rights and nobody's even looking at each other saying, hey, why can't I give an apple to this person that's starving on the corner here, or why am I going to be fined $250,000 if I called him her when I didn't realize I was offending her.
I mean, as far as the homeless thing goes, if you're a Christian or a Catholic or whatever, that's a religious thing, I would think, because, and not just that, but then other religions, taking care of the homeless and those dispossessed from their houses and property or whatever, that's sort of a religious obligation. So you would think that would be covered under freedom of religion, but it's, again, all these things don't mean anything anymore.
No, not in a reality where authorities, statists can selectively enforce whatever they want. They can create whatever regulations and laws they want, and then you selectively enforce them against political enemies.
Let's put aside the bullshit. This is modern America. You cannot feed the homeless in Texas, but your government can give weapons to ISIS.
Oh my God, that's it in a nutshell right there. Well said, Daniel.
That's messed up, dude. That is totally messed up. But you're right. You're right. That's a perfect illustration of what's going on here. We can't feed homeless people, regardless of our motivation, without appealing to authority to get a permit to do so and then pay money out of our pockets to do so, yet our government can arm and train jihadists in foreign countries to literally destroy countries and cultures.
Yeah.
Where are we headed? We're headed to a very bad place, and I think we're going to get a lot more of that in 2016 now that social justice is a thing, now that now that reality television is the paradigm for our politics. My goodness.
I'm not into fear porn or anything, but this stuff is really kind of scary. It was recently, something happened recently, I can't remember what city it was in, or town, but there was some farmers, the people that own land that had cattle grazing, and they were doing, I guess, brushback, I don't really know what you call it, where they're doing burn-offs to keep their crops growing on this land for the cattle to graze on, and they had been convicted of terrorism and arson. And they did eventually get released from that category because there was a justified judge on the case. But it's really easy for people that are trying to do a good thing and make a living to suddenly fall into a category of being a terrorist or, you know, doing awful and evil things in this day and age. It's really scary. You can feel like you're doing everything lawfully and correctly, and then suddenly you cross a line and the federal government wants to put you in a cell.
Yeah, that's right, Spore. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that you're right, Spore. I just became aware of this one this week too, because one of our friends pointed it out to us, and I thought it was a very interesting case, because this happened in Oregon, and the judge... It's kind of I don't know. I read the whole thing, and these guys, you know, they may have needed to go to court for what they did. You know, they started some fires that burned out of control. There were a couple incidents, but the thing is, from if I understand this correctly, and I'm not an expert on this case, but if I understood it correctly, they're trying to use a 1996 law intended to punish domestic terrorists on these ranchers. And these ranchers may have messed up. They may have definitely messed up. And
so why not just slap them with a basic arson charge?
Okay, well, exactly. And that's kind of what happened here. It sounds to me like when they originally went to court, the Oregon judge who was overseeing this dispute essentially said, you can't try these guys as terrorists. You know, we're not going to try these people as terrorists. And I believe two members of the farming family did have to do time. You know, there was one of them,
I think, like 10 months.
Yeah, there was a 10-month sentence and like a 1-year sentence with some time off for good behavior and whatnot. And these guys, they did their time and they came out, and now the federal court is coming back and trying to retry them and make them do much longer stints in prison for what happened on the land, you know. And this is of course BLM. BLM is involved here, and if you followed what happened at the Bundy Ranch, you're probably familiar with the draconian tactics of the BLM trying to, trying to bully farmers, American family farmers who have been providing food for Americans for many generations. I mean, geez, the Bundys, I believe, were the last remaining farmers there out of 51 or something like that in Clark County. And here comes the BLM armed up like they're a SWAT team. And they're
That's why I don't get, like, half of these departments now all have their own paramilitary groups.
Yeah, why does the Bureau of Land Management, a management bureau...
The Department of Education has one.
Yeah, the social services, social security, I mean, anything that's under a federal umbrella now.
CPS.
Yeah, CPS, I mean, they're all being militarized.
It would seem to me, in a sane time, why not just send the FBI or the local sheriff or whoever to go detain so-and-so first, their supposed alleged offenses. But no, now every department has its own little paramilitary group that can go kick in your door and shoot you or what have you. and there's no, and nobody seems to think this is a problem.
Yeah, and where is your local sheriff when this is happening? Your local sheriff is an elected official who should be there disallowing that. Or if they have something against you, then they should call you up and bring you in. Not invite jackboot government thugs from some untrained wannabe paramilitary three-letter agency like the BLM to come in and kill your cattle, push your pregnant aunt down, kick the old lady with cancer,
kill your dog. But the federal government already has the FBI and the Secret Service, which should be more than enough to cover any of these things if they seriously need to arrest somebody. Why do all these departments need their own little private armies?
Well, I would wager it is because of slave training. They want everybody to think that anybody with a black uniform and a gun on their hip is an authority that they need to drop their pants for.
Oh, I mean, it was a rhetorical question on my part. I know why. Like you said, like it's one. On one hand, it's that, and on the other hand, there's a lot of money. There's a lot of money in arming all these different department outfits. So the private contractors make a lot of money. The government makes money. Everybody gets their slice of the pie, and the rest of us get screwed.
And it's a mafia tactic as well to say, okay, you know, we provided you with all these arms. We gave you this authority. So when we come a-calling, when we call you guys up at the BLM and tell you, hey, we don't like this family in Nevada. We don't like this family in Oregon. You need to go down there with all those arms we gave you and that crappy training we gave you and go down there and screw these people's lives up. And what do? They jump on it. They absolutely jump on it. And that is the case with the Hammonds. That is the Hammond family in Oregon. It was the case with the Bundys in Nevada. And, I mean, countless other cases that we've probably never even heard of.
Well, I'll say the case that caught my attention this week was this kid, this teenager who has an IQ of 51, who was set up by the FBI for supposedly being an ISIS terrorist.
Well, talk about low-hanging fruit.
I mean, according to the article, it was written by William Grigg. He wrote an article about it. The kid needs assistance using the bathroom. I mean, this is the mental state. And I'm not saying this as a joke. I mean, this poor kid. He's mentally retarded in the technical sense of the word.
Yeah, and he's being set up by an agency like the FBI.
Yeah, and he's mentally retarded. He's on the internet. He doesn't know. I would assume he doesn't know what he's doing, what he's saying. And you get in one of these little FBI agent provocateurs pretending to be an ISIS recruiter, lures this kid in, and now he's going to have to go on trial and all this other nonsense. And that's the state we live in, that the FBI has nothing better to do with its time than set up mentally retarded teenagers as ISIS terrorists.
Amazing. Amazing. Do they have nothing better to do? Are these three-letter agencies, especially the FBI, man?
Gosh, I mean, if you really look into that specific subject, you're going to find so many different articles about cases similar to that where, you know, there's a guy who's having a seizure and he's getting restrained and beaten the heck out of him by police force, or he's autistic and they're tasering him because he, you know,
jaywalked.
Yeah, jaywalked, or he's got Tourette's, so he's swearing a lot, and it's just the abuse that can come from the state is outrageous, and it's kind of like shoved to the back of the paper. You know, there might be an article about it or something like that, but people don't realize that this is happening in greater and greater numbers, and you know, people really need to be protective of themselves and their families because the police, or not, I don't even want to call it the police force.
Just
I
the want to state.
Call it the state or the force.
The dark side.
Is no longer looking out for our good. They used to be called peace officers.
Long gone.
Well, say so you no longer have Barney Fife anymore.
No, man, those were the days right there, and that is long, long gone.
Now you have Judge Dredd.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Man, I'm looking at the this kid that you're referring to here in the article you sent. I'll be sure and put that on the show post tonight. We're going to have a lot of reference links tonight. So if you're out there listening, you'll want to check the Boiler Room episode 37 show page out later tonight or tomorrow. I'll have all the reference links up. Man, what a mess. What a mess. Why? Someone tell me why a huge, bloated, militarized propaganda agency like the FBI would groom a mentally disabled teen with a 51 IQ into a quote-unquote ISIS terrorist. This is disgusting.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely disgusting.
And it's not the first time.
No.
And if you look at... it's my understanding that something like 90 to 95% of these so-called ISIS cells that have been so-called disrupted in the United States, they've been run, managed, groomed from start to finish by the FBI.
Yeah, like what are they trying to reach a quota here? They can't reach their quota to legitimize their existence, to validate their existence as a giant black bag vacuum, a hole, a money hole that is completely without any sort of, you know what I mean? You can't audit these guys. What was it, like $18 trillion missing from the budget now? Or, you know, $18 trillion debt, and $8 trillion of it is completely missing?
But look at these people that they're arresting. Most of them, in this case, we have literally a mentally retarded individual. In most of the other cases, you have people who are mentally retarded, mentally ill in some way, schizophrenics and these kinds, people who have no money and so they're just desperate to do anything to get a little bit of cash. So they find what we might call the dregs of society and set them up as these big scary ISIS terrorist cells. And then everybody gets behind the war effort, and the FBI gets to up their budget for the next year.
Yeah, they had to come up with a way to validate the trillions of black bag money they got the year before and accomplished absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. I don't know about you guys, but I had a friend growing up whose brother was mentally retarded, and he's just the nicest guy, you know, the nicest family. And I cannot imagine the destruction it would do to that poor person and that poor person's family if government agents came in and tried to do this to them. I mean, this is an atrocity.
But it goes to Congress. If we had a Congress where we had actual individuals in Congress who were actual real patriots who actually cared about their country, they would tell the FBI, you either knock it off or we're cutting your funding. But no, everybody's got their hand in the pot, and nobody wants to do anything. So Congress, who controls the budget of the FBI, who could tell the FBI to, if you forgive me, to fuck off if they were so inclined to do so, they're not going to do it because they get their kickbacks out of it. They're all in it together. They, you know, one faction gets money for their bureau, another faction gets the propaganda and fear mongering for their wars. So one hand washes the other.
Disgusting.
Yeah, what do we have to what can we do about this?
What can we do about
what
this?
What do we do for the future of the world? Like okay, the political system, the government, it's all totally screwed.
It's broken.
It's broken, and it's not even broken. It's actually probably working really well forever.
Yeah, considering their goals. Yeah, they're doing great. Yeah, great job, guys.
They're doing awesome. The plebs, like all of us, we have no say. We have no real say in what happens politically or lawfully. We have no say in what happens to our tax money, which is about 50% of what we earn. So 50% of what we do during our days for work is being given to a dark government that gets to choose which wars they want to use our money for and which ways to profit off of it.
And which ways to weaponize it towards us.
Weaponize it towards us, yep. And the wars, these wars that we've been, I hate saying we, because I want to say I have no part in this, but I do pay taxes, and that's why it really makes me angry. But these wars are unjust. They are a conglomeration of genocide and bullying and trying to steal, you know, resources from other countries. I mean, where do we go from here? How do we get out of this?
I don't think there's a way out. I don't
see. Yeah, callers. Any callers?
Someone want to call in and give us a suggestion
just watch The Force Awakens and you're all set.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, if you want to call in, you have a suggestion. I'm gonna go ahead and go out on a limb right now. It's a pretty thick limb, I gotta say, and say there is no way out. We're not gonna have. Well, that's why I asked you the question earlier, Daniel. Like, what do you think is going to happen? Like, are people going to actually realize that the system is broken and designed? Well, it's not broken. Like I agree with you, Spore. It's not that it's broken. It's that it's been weaponized and turned against the entire world for the purposes of globalization, consolidation of resources, destruction of culture, you name it. You go on and on and on. If you want to call in and give us your vision of the way out of this, you can call in. It's 218-936-0912. And the passcode you're going to need to put in is 379.
Oh, I'm hoping Patrick.
417 pound.
I'm hoping Patrick tunes in or connects with us soon because he's the person that actually has a really good positive view on this sort of stuff, and I get buried into a little pit myself, and I'm sorry. I hope I'm not bringing all of our darling listeners into my pit.
No, that's okay, and I agree. I think Patrick made a very good point 2 weeks ago when he had Gilad on, and he closed the show out with a talk about just knowing, you know. It was almost like, I don't mean to minimize it, but it reminded me of being a kid, and G.I. Joe telling me that, you know, when I'd watch my G.I. Joe cartoon, knowing is half the battle. I mean, if you go back and watch those G.I. Joe cartoons, you'll see a bit of propaganda in those as well. But the statement
predictive programming through and through.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, Daniel. I mean, oh, we need Jay Dyer. We need Jay Dyer to talk about G.I. Joe and predictive programming and
Jay went through. Yeah, Jay went through. I'm trying to get him on the lines.
So. Yeah, so Jay, if you're out there listening, man, come in here and give us a little bit of esoteric Hollywood with regards to G.I. Joe. But back to Patrick's point, knowing is half the battle. And just knowing what's going on puts you in a different, human zeitgeist of understanding. And I think that's a big deal right there.
Plus, you know, a lot of the, he's made the point several times also that there is even the millennials, these people that are younger than me personally.
My generation, huh?
The Spalding generation.
Just slightly, like
Darth Millennial.
Like a year or two. But anyways, they're sort of interested and more into research and the internet, and this is opening a lot of their eyes. And Patrick was, you know, kind of telling us recently that we should be hopeful for this next generation because finding out the real information, what's really going on in our world, it could likely become, for lack of a better use of words, trendy. And if that really happens and we have a new generation of people like you, Daniel, you know, you little...
people who actually read.
I'm on the first wave of the millennials. So
Generation Spalding from Randy J.
Yes.
Randy Generation J. Spalding.
Randy, call in. Randy, I'm taking this time to talk to you directly. Call in to the show.
But yeah, I don't know. Patrick gave me some hope. He, you know, he said that, that younger people are starting to wake up because they can't be blocked out from it. Like, you know, when Hesher and I were growing up, which was not that long ago, we're still growing up, but there was, you know, certain channels you can watch, certain things you can watch, and certain things you can't watch. When you have
My Little Pony.
You're exposed, yes. Yeah, My Little Pony. But you can now access pretty much any information that you want to get at in this day and age. And hopefully there's a lot of really intelligent young people that will take advantage of that.
You're right, Spore. I got to point out as a warning to those people, though, of that generation, you know, you and I and some of us Gen Xers and generation before that, we had the unimpeded internet, you know, between 1997 and 2007, the internet was like the wild, wild west. The information was just out there. And now I really feel sorry for people who are a little bit younger and having to deal with the current state of the internet, because even the, you know, we're alternate current radio. But the whole term, you know, all the words get subverted, and now the alternative media is another, you know, seven-headed hydra that needs to be waged war against, because even media outlets that claim to be alternative, they claim to be independent, have multi-million dollar backers and have very, very devious intents, and the waters are very muddy, you know. So if you're of that millennial generation or even younger, you've got a lot of bullshit to wade through to get to the truth. So you know, just for the Gen Xers and the people that were there on the internet when it, you know, back when Windows 98 came out,
back,
Windows 95,
back when Al Gore 98. Invented it.
Yeah, yeah. Al Gore came along and tried to say he invented it, you know, and that California's going to fall off the coast if you don't turn in your vehicles, even though he's flying around 9 jets that use more gas in 5 minutes than you'll use in an entire year.
What a bunch of dumbasses that believe that.
Oh, my God.
Oh, sorry. I was one of those.
Yeah, but what a great psychological operation that guy ran to take, you know, I mean, the green religion, the green peace. I mean, geez, even the people that founded Greenpeace know now that
you need Bronco for that stuff.
Go ahead, Daniel.
I said you need Bronco for that subject.
Oh, my gosh. I know. That was awesome to have Bronco with us last week. We're going to have to get Bronco back on. You're right. He's been doing some crazy good research on the new, what, like Agenda 2030. They've had to recycle Agenda 21. It's no longer hip. It's no longer cool. Totally rebranded.
So, what do you think, Hesher? For anybody that doesn't know what Agenda 21 or Agenda 30 is, can you give a brief synopsis?
I'll just say it's globalization. It is the ultimate United Nations map towards pushing people into cities, living into cities and squalor, making it cool and trendy to be poor, to live in a tiny little box.
Under the guise of
the earth, the green. Let's be green. Let's everybody be fearful of man-made, well, I guess we got to call it climate change now. That's another one that's been rebranded.
It doesn't even necessarily, it could be, it's all sorts of green.
Green. Yeah, it's green.
Green, carbon monoxide.
The green god.
Your footprint on the earth.
Yes, your carbon footprint.
I would sum it up as this Agenda 21, Agenda
2030.
Basically makes every one of you, and myself included,
Echo.
The people that are destroying the earth.
Yes,
and
yes.
If you love the earth, then you need to follow the rules of the Agenda 21 and find yourself a 20 by 20 square foot box to live in a big city.
Oh, yeah. You can find these things in San Francisco. They're very cool-looking buildings. You can find them in Hong Kong, all over the place. You know, big city. You can live in one of these little boxes for, you know, the low, low cost of $2,000 a month or something like that.
Yeah,
and live like you're in a prison that you can walk out the door whenever you want.
But you can get all sorts of different organizing tools to make it comfortable for you, like they do in Japan.
Oh, yeah. Remember that one? We watched a show recently about, it was like an architect or modern houses, you know, one of those shows about houses. And they touted this tiny, it was a guy in Hong Kong, and they're like, check out this guy's house. It's so cool. It's only 200 square feet, but he's put these rolling walls in there so you can roll one wall to the side, move all your crap out of the way, and then there'll be a sink. Can you imagine that? You'll have running water if you can just move your wall to the side. I mean, it's disgusting. Absolutely disgusted by the way they glorify tiny, overpriced abodes. And if you do your reading on Agenda 21, if you and follow up what's going on, follow Bronco and his writings on this, you'll get a clear picture of where the globalist United Nations wants you as a citizen of whatever country you're living in to consider home.
Well, you know,
as I say, and you're not going to see George Soros or David Rockefeller living in those little boxes.
Or Al Gore.
No, Al Gore, after I watched that, what was it? That stupid film I watched that made me cry when I was still stupid.
Oh, the
Inconvenient Truth?
Yes.
Yes, I went to that movie with my mother back.
And it's nothing more than like a PowerPoint slide. I mean, what a cheap thrill.
But at the time, for me, it was not a thrill. It was devastating. I was really, it was manipulating me and my mother and my family. And my parents live on the coastline of California, and I was terrified that they were going to lose their home by the ocean because we were driving cars that were melting ice caps that were going to drown out the ocean and
the polar bears.
The polar bears,
they can't swim.
And I mean, seriously, that stuff is so effective.
Well, that's to say, Al Gore is the left wing version of like these guys, like Alex Jones and Joel Skousen and the rest who have been predicting end of the world economic collapse, Yellowstone volcano, all this stuff. They've been predicting it for the past 15 years and nothing's ever happened. And Al Gore is just the left-wing version of that.
Nothing's ever happening, but Al Gore is building one of his biggest...
Oh, yeah, he makes a lot of money off it.
Biggest mansion on the coast of California.
Because you have all the fear-mongering is the biggest racket there is. So if you can find a certain niche audience, whether it's people scared of the American caliphate or scared that the ocean's going to rise up and overwhelm Florida, or that all the polar bears are disappearing, or whatever your particular fear-mongering points are, you stand to make a lot of money off that.
Yeah,
people will pay to be afraid.
And here we are approaching 2016. What is that? 7 years after Gore's movie, and some of our chat members know what's up. One of them said, "Rupert Fan Club says 200 square feet. I think we can get it to about 180." And then he also says, Al Gore can't fit in a 200 square feet these days. That guy has gotten so bloated and fat. So
like Michael Moore.
Bloated and fat on the fear that he's been peddling, just like Michael Moore. Just like Michael Moore. That's a good point. Oh, man, we could do a whole show on that guy.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Michael Moore now looks like some middle-aged suburban lesbian.
I don't. You have to call him.
I haven't seen him recently.
You better call him Michelle, or you'll get charged $250,000.
Michelle Moore. He was protesting out front of Trump Towers recently.
How dare you refer to him as an opposite gender? You are going to be fined.
Your microaggressions will not be tolerated, bro.
Luckily, I don't live in New York. I was going to say, do you mind shifting gears a bit?
Or? Yeah, let's shift gears, man. We beat this
death. I figure people have had enough of the doom and gloom.
Oh, my gosh. Doom and gloom. I love that song you brought last week, by the way.
Pull that one back up for the listeners.
Yeah, I may have
to. Did you guys get to see the new Star Wars movie?
Yes, we have.
Did. I finally watched it. Was it the day after Christmas? I finally saw it.
IMAX 3D?
Just normal cinematic, you know, experience.
You lost out on the best
part. Do you have IMAX in South Korea?
I think there's one or two somewhere around, but not anywhere I'm willing to travel to.
I think, I don't know, maybe I speak for both of us, but that was the best part of the movie, was the realizing how far 3D technology has come in cinema. But go ahead, man. Go ahead and...
I was just wondering, when you were, either of you, when you were younger, was important was Star Wars in your life?
It was big for me, dude. It was actually the first movie I saw in the theater with my parents. That was literally the first time I ever went to the movies, was for Star Wars. And I was a big Star Wars nerd growing up, I'll admit it.
The first movie I saw was Ghostbusters, and Star Wars was taught to me in English, and I found it boring.
Well, I'm a little bit younger than you guys, but when I was in my early teens, Star Wars was my religion, essentially. So, I was really disappointed with the prequels.
Me too.
You know, those were a big letdown.
Huge mess.
And going to see the new one, though, overall, I didn't think it was anything, it wasn't outstanding or anything, but it was kind of... an experience to see Han Solo and Chewbacca back on the screen again after 30 years.
Yeah.
So that, I was kind of had some moist eyes of seeing Han Solo reappear for the first time, and Leia and C-3PO, and even Admiral Akbar was there.
Admiral Akbar, I know, dude. I was like, oh my God. Yeah, there were definitely, it was a bit of a roller coaster for me. A lot of, I have a lot of really positive things I could say about it, but I also have a list of cons. I have a pretty good list,
it's kind
of pros and cons.
Mixed bag, I think.
Yeah.
And it was better than the prequels, I'll give it that.
Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, J.J. Abrams, he knows how to reboot something. Let's just put it that way. This guy, he did a pretty good job of rebooting. I would wager, and maybe this is Disney's fault, but I would wager that he did a better job rebooting Star Trek than he did Star Wars, simply because Star Wars was so, Episode 7 is so formulated. There's really not, I mean, it's a cinematic experience that cannot be denied, a modern cinematic experience indeed, but very safe, very, very formulated and safe.
Yeah, he didn't go out on any limbs.
No, they really stuck to the original formula, and they blatantly, disgustingly tried to make it fit into the social justice, political correctness norms of 2015.
Yeah, but in kind of in a way that kind of like bringing about one of the J.J. Abrams, by his own confession, said he made a point of making the major characters a black guy and a woman. But it's funny because even though he brings, one of the major characters is this black kid, Finn, who I think did a pretty well job, all things considered. I don't knock the actor for his work. But it was funny because, all these social justice warriors, they try to bring forth these kind of, for instance, they necessitate these black characters, but then they try to make the black character imbibe what we might call white values. So he's not even authentically black, as it were, but he's a black man, but he has to, you know, embody these white values, you know, or these things from European traditions rather than African traditions. So essentially they project, again, white values, European values onto non-whites, which to me is kind of an ironic thing.
What does it mean, white values? What are white values?
Well, in my understanding, values are not universal. You know, if you go to different continents, different countries, different regions, people have different values, yes?
Yes.
European people, which white Americans are an extension of, have their own historical experience from which their values come from. And then always in their effort to be politically correct, they'll bring into stories or into movies these non-white characters, but then always they're espousing, you know, values or whatever that have their roots in European history and European historical experience, rather than the historical experience of African people or Asian people or Middle Eastern people or what have you.
Absolutely, man. And of course, they have to make him incapable of surviving the movie himself without the strong female character.
Female, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, they have to use, you know, she's this cute girl. I mean, they couldn't use some Jabba the Hutt social justice warrior.
No, absolutely not. You're not going to see, it's not going to be like it was in the 70s, you know. I mean, geez, we just watched episode 4 the other night, and Princess Leia is braless. You know what I mean? Yeah. She is absolutely braless, and that goes all the way into Return of the Jedi, where you've got Slave Leia. You're not going to see anything like that. You're not going to see any sort of sexualization of any female characters in Star Wars ever again. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, it was so weird. It was like the first time I had seen that, the original one, you call it number 4, right?
Yep.
In a long time, and I was like, man, she's not wearing a bra. And like, apparently, it just came out that she was kind of duped into not wearing a bra because, was it Lucas that basically said, if you're in space, then your tits don't need a bra or something like that.
Lucas, I read something about that.
Lucas is a perv.
Lucas, yeah, the 1979 Lucas, 77 Lucas, definitely. And, of course, you know, then we get the Jar Jar Binks era, and you've got, you know, a guy who's writing movies for 10-year-old kids at that point, and now we've got J.J. Abrams, who's writing scripts and characters for, you know, just repackaging. And I mean, essentially, you know, I don't want to give too many spoilers out because I know not everybody's seen it yet, but we've already talked about this on Boiler Room. And essentially, it is the social justice warrior approved revision of the Star Wars universe. And I think it could have been a lot better. I think it could have been done a lot better. There could have been a lot more originality in it. I don't have anything against any of the actors in it. I thought most of the people that were involved in it were pretty good. But I think the writing could have been a lot more imaginative and not just a rehash of what's already happened. You know, and that's why I say the Star Trek reboot was, in my opinion, better than the Star Wars reboot. And I feel like, you know, someone mentioned this in an article. I don't have it in front of me, but I thought he did a really good article. And he said it was essentially like a 2-hour trailer for the next 2 episodes.
Yeah, I saw that article.
That was a good article. I'm going to have to find it.
Yeah, he's got a point there.
I totally agree with him.
This is just kind of like the preamble for the next 2 or 3 movies that Abrams wants to make. So he just had to get something out there, get things warmed up, get the audience warmed up, and I'll grab their attention real quick so that they're ready for what he thinks will be the real Star Wars episodes that he wants to put out.
Right. And I don't know. I will say speaking from a strictly film nerd perspective, I very much appreciated the use of actual costumes, actual life-size models. You know, there's a lot of stuff that
the
was...
The cinematography was real, amazing.
Real sets.
Like no other. And if you do go see that, and I would suggest you do this, Daniel, that if you can see it in IMAX with 3D, it's hands down like one of the best films I've seen in regards to those items.
Yeah, and you know, big ups to J.J. Abrams and crew for going back to actually building models, actually creating movie makeup, movie magic, you know, actual real-life stuff. I mean, they definitely lean on computer-generated graphics a lot and, you know, fast-cut scenes and, you know, overdone action and all that. That is true, but if you compare it to the prequels that Lucas was at the helm of, where just everything was computer generated, it's a huge upgrade. It's a huge upgrade to have actors in costume, as opposed to, you know, 80% of the characters being completely computer generated.
So you know, building off of that, then what do you guys think was the best movie of 2015 that you saw?
Oh man, that's rough. That's rough. We saw Jurassic Park, and that's...
Oh, I know what it was. The one that we saw in a theater.
Which one?
Ant-Man.
Ant-Man was pretty fun. I got to give it up to, you know, and there again, another Disney studio. But, you know, Disney's recently purchased LucasArts. Disney has recently purchased Marvel. I mean, Disney is...
And they own Star Trek, too, right?
They do, yeah. I mean, they are the black hole that is sucking in all the entertainment, and I think that may not be a good thing in the long run, but I think Ant-Man was probably, I got to agree, Spore. I think that was my favorite thing I saw this year.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
For me personally, I like Mad Max.
Oh, yeah, Mad Max was rad, dude.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really? Daniel, I'm surprised.
I loved that. I thought that was fun. I had a good time at that one, and it had the most metal scene ever.
Again, it's like Star Wars. It has its little social justice warrior angle.
It does, yeah.
But just in terms of the visualization and you know, I thought the actors did really well, and it had a pretty fun story.
I think so too. Yeah, and that whole the wasteland mobile, you know, warrior troop with the giant vehicle with the guy playing a flame throwing guitar and all those drummers on it. I mean, for me, that was when I saw that scene, I was all in. I was just like, yes, this is a apocalyptic fun movie with a nice heavy metal sensibility to it. I really enjoyed that.
I didn't much care for the new Terminator movie, though.
Dude, that was crap.
That was ridiculous.
That was stupid. I'd say Terminator and Jurassic Park earned the Boiler Room You Suck Award for cinematography and film writing. I mean, geez. They took Terminator and turned it into a caricature of itself. I mean, I have so many complaints about the new Terminator, starting with, okay, biggest complaint, they took every scene from the original Terminator and T2 and redid them and then destroyed the plot line to it. They redid it, made it sensational, and then took the outcome of the scene and totally twisted it. They took this frail little girl who did a decent job on Game of Thrones, but they take this frail little anorexic chick and try to tell me that she's a young Sarah Connor. Not buying that one at all. That was a ridiculous casting mistake, in my opinion. And then they take the protagonist of the entire Terminator universe and turn him into the antithesis of that, to turn the whole thing on its head for no reason. I walked out of that movie disgusted.
I
would like to throw Jurassic Park into that bucket as well.
I deliberately avoided the new Jurassic Park movie.
What a turd.
So I never saw it.
Like a pile of turd.
You know, just, I mean, we're kind of ragging on J.J. Abrams a little bit here for taking a formula and modernizing it. At least he modernized it a little bit, you know, made it relevant to current young people. With Jurassic Park, whatever they called that latest one, I mean, did they even hire someone to write a script? It was like they took the old script and said, just use this, but imagine bigger special effects. There was nothing different about it, man. You didn't miss out by seeing that. In fact, if it's out on DVD now, you might want to check it out just so you can, you know, put it to rest in your mind.
Is that there? Yeah, there's no unrest in my mind.
Yeah, I guess on the other hand, I could say don't bother. But if you're out there listening and you're wondering, you want a good laugh at Hollywood and how lame they can be, you know, check out the new Jurassic Park movie because it's just a crappy reimagination of the original one.
Boring.
Then there was, I don't know if you saw it, was the final Hunger Games movie.
I'm way behind on that one, actually. I think, okay, I've only seen one and two in that series.
It wasn't actually that bad. I mean, it came out maybe a month or 2 months ago. I mean, the message is good. Jennifer Lawrence, she's a, you know, attractive young actress. So
she's the one that said that people should be, it should be illegal for people to call people fat.
Yeah, I don't take them seriously when they, you know, actors and actors, they always say this or that. I mean, I just try to judge them as actors or actresses. I mean, if you're taking your political talking points from an actress, you need to rethink your life. Yeah, you need to rethink your life. But I mean, as far as the movie goes, I think she's a, I mean, she's not a great actress, but she's a competent actress.
Oh, I think she's a really good actress.
Yeah, she's cute. She's, you know, so she does well on the screen. So in the Hunger Games movie, I think she did pretty good, and it's got a good message. I think you might like it, Spore. You know, ends on a positive note. Cool. And kind of, well, I thought it kind of, without giving any spoilers, I thought it was also a little bit, in a good way, it was a little bit subversive. It's a subversive movie in a good way.
So it's out in the theaters right now?
I think it came out like maybe 2 months ago.
Yeah, it might be too late to catch it in the theater.
Yeah. If it's not, it will soon be on DVD. So
was that the final installment? Is that a trilogy?
Yeah. I think it's four movies.
It's a quadrilogy, so I'm one behind. I mean, geez, yeah. I need to see number three in that
one. I think that's probably the last cinematic appearance of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Right, that's right. R.I.P. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Now who was, I think, a great actor.
I agree, I'm a fan of his. He's good.
Yeah.
He's been in a lot of good stuff.
But I'm trying to think of some other movies that came out. Because I usually just watch the more kind of action or science fiction stuff, so I don't get to see too much of the other stuff that doesn't appeal to me. The new Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah, and Spectre was a big one this year. I didn't get to see either of those.
I saw Spectre. I didn't really care for it.
Really?
Yeah, didn't click with me. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't up to Daniel Craig's other movies, I thought.
I read an interview with him. It sounded like even he wasn't all that into it, and like he's kind of done with that series.
Well, I think it's his last one, so he's maybe he doesn't have the same energy and I don't know what you want to call it, but same energy and zest that he had in his earlier films.
Yeah, man. Well, I got a little bit of catching up to do cinematically this year, but I don't know. I'm going to have to stick with Spore on this one. I'm going to give my vote to Ant-Man this year.
Not Avengers?
Was that this year, Ultron?
Age of Ultron. Filmed out. A little trivia for our audience, that some of the scenes that took place in South Korea were filmed in front of my previous apartment.
No kidding.
Yeah. Wow, right on the street. You can see, like, for a second, you see an ATM, you know, booth, which I had used on several occasions.
You were in there putting on your super suit?
Yeah, riding around with the Black Widow.
Nice. I'm going to have to be honest here and admit that I still have not seen Age of Ultron, so I cannot give any, you know, that might be my favorite after all, and I don't even know it yet.
Because I saw Ant-Man, but I didn't really get into it, so.
It had a very odd timing and sense of humor to it. It was
I don't know why I loved it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it wasn't bad, but it just wasn't, I don't know, I guess people, different strokes for different folks.
I was expecting it to be like a super action, what do you call it, Comic-Con or something like I thought it was going to be like action-filled, like plot-driven and just like action, you know, kind of stuff that girls aren't that really into sort of film. But I thought it was really full of humor and there was like an intricate plot going on there for that type of film.
Yeah, well, the Marvel films, that's one thing Disney seems to be keeping with Marvel films is they're definitely keeping with the sense of humor that you get from a lot of the graphic novel writers.
I was going to say, going on this same line, I didn't know if you plan on winding down soon or not, but I just wanted to ask if we could maybe quickly, I was hoping maybe Patrick and Jay would be here, but I guess unfortunately they're occupied, but... I was wondering what you guys thought for just the year of 2015. Who's the biggest winner? Who's the biggest loser?
The biggest winner.
In regards to what? Just in general?
Just in general. Just in terms of the news scene or, international or even national events.
Biggest loser.
What do you think? Do you have any in mind?
I would say McCain because he's constantly just a loser. And continues to be one.
That's a good one. Yeah, McCain. Insane McCain. The constant loser.
Because I was thinking Jeb Bush, because everybody was predicting Jeb. He's going to be the front runner. It's going to be Jeb Clinton in 2016. And his campaign has completely fizzled into nothing at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a hard time seeing that one go anywhere. But you know what? I think that... underdoggery is a very keen political trick, and I know that the Clintons have used it in the past, because, you know, that's part of the Joseph Campbell archetype is underdogs, and everybody loves the underdog in reality television. So I think you're right there. One of the biggest losers, Jeb.
He may make a comeback. I'm skeptical of that, but he, at least as far as this year goes, he's a loser. A big loser.
Yeah, that was evident on our debate specials, definitely.
I'm totally struggling. Like, who is somebody that I really respect from what they did in the last year?
It's not even a matter of respecting. It's just somebody that you think, even if you don't like them, you think they came out on top this year.
I would, you know, honestly, I would have to say Trump. I mean, even though I am not endorsing him, I don't support him, I would never vote for him. I think that what he's done by creating a sort of alternative spot in a president candidacy position is pretty amazing. He's kind of thrown people all over the place with things that were unexpected. So I would say he's the biggest winner in that sort of realm.
Yeah,
that's respectable.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, just in terms of a year ago, nobody was talking about Trump, and now he's headlines every day.
Yeah, love him or hate him.
Him. Again, it's not a matter of supporting him or not supporting him. It's just he is the news.
Yeah, he's like, people on their political sides.
Yeah.
But I just wanted, as far as losers go, I would also add the Obama administration with their Syrian policy.
Yep.
Are also one of the biggest losers of this year, because Putin came into Syria, flicked the lights on, and, you know, put them to flight, and they are not going to have their way in Syria, at least for now.
One could even take that a step further and say that NATO is the biggest loser of the year politically.
And that's why I put Putin as my runner-up for winner of the year.
I would like to say that the more most courageous woman of the year is the Biggest Loser.
Caitlyn Jenner. She didn't lose anything. She's, yes. She still has all her parts.
She didn't lose anything. Not just all her parts. She's got some tits on him.
She's got extra parts.
She got some titties on him too. She got her dick and her. Sorry.
I'm gonna have to agree with you, Daniel, and say that geopolitically, Putin is up there as a winner, as well as Assad. I put Assad right up there with Putin.
Just by surviving this long, he's a winner.
Yeah, and the Syrian Arab Army. I have big respect for the Syrian Arab Army. I've been watching that conflict from the point when they had only lost 1,000 men to the point now where it's almost up to 80,000 or whatever the number is at currently. And for all the music people out there, I would have to say that the Biggest Loser is the Eagles of Crap Metal for their participation in the false flag events of Paris this year. Huge losers. Much disrespect to those guys. Fuck them.
And music sucks either way.
Yeah, dude. And the winner in the rock and roll community is Lemmy. Lemmy from Motorhead
has made
26 albums. He released an album this year back in March or April, toured all year, had his 70th birthday on Christmas Eve, was diagnosed with cancer on the 26th, and died on the 28th. I mean, that guy rocked his entire life.
R.I.P. Lemmy.
Stop. R.I.P. Lemmy. That's what I got to say. That's my hero of the year, so, you know, to get outside of the geopolitics realm.
The Ace of Spades.
The Ace of Spades. You got it, man. You got it. Hey, that was a great outro for the show there, Daniel. I think that was a great idea to do our biggest pluses, our biggest plus-ups, and our biggest negatives of the year. Over here at Boiler Room.
Let's say then one final question then.
Okay, go for it.
What is everyone's prediction then for the coming year? Just in geopolitics, elections, you know, just in a couple quick sentences, what does everyone think?
Some joke election where some person that is supposedly elected by the people gets put into a position and people get some sort of hope and
hope for change.
Possibly a World War III seems pretty likely, and more restrictions on our personal rights, and an awakening of the younger people that will start following information that's true and real, and you know, the information that comes out of our network. And I'm hoping for a big flood of people that will.
Where will the next Daily Shooter be?
Oh.
No, there's no way to know that.
The next Daily Shooter, let's see.
Well, I was saying you've had all these various scenarios already. You had the Muslim, you had the white supremacist, you have
the churches,
schools,
abortion clinic,
health place, like what location,
the military
and what
base. What's
yeah, so. So what do you think?
The perpetrators will more likely be white Muslims, converted Muslims.
Oh, radicalized, internet radicalized Muslims?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who are white, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big one.
I'm going to also call, I think you'll see one of 2016 Daily Shooter events, I think, will take place in a mosque.
Oh yeah!
Oh.
Oh yeah!
Really?
Oh yeah! That one might even be natural with all the fear they're whipping up amongst the plebs.
You mean it would be?
It will be some kind of Tea Party 3%
of these guys
that goes and does this.
No,
yeah.
That actually, when you say that, that actually sounds more likely as a real event rather than.
Well, real or because I think the so-called 3% movement is clearly FBI run. So.
Yeah, it's, that's why.
I mean, the feds will have their finger in it one way or the other.
Yeah, that's why it's turned into the Patriotard movement, unfortunately. Yeah, I got to agree. We got to watch out for that one coming up in 2016. I don't have anything specific to predict, but more of the same, more shocking, more daily shows,
reality TV,
more fake reality TV, more of the same. They're just going to turn the volume up on everything at this point. But
and the Pentagon is rewriting their ISIS narrative, so keep an eye out for how they where they go with that.
Oh yeah, they have to. They have to rewrite it at this point. So I think that's another really good point. Let's all keep an eye out, and we're already seeing it start to form. You know, they're already admitting they need to rewrite their narrative. I mean, it's out there. It's happening right now. They're listening to Boiler Room, and they're trying to figure out, okay, the kids are listening to Boiler Room out there, so we got to come up with something really crafty, because all of our tricks from these last few years have just totally fallen through the woodworks.
Again, my final advice to you guys, get rid of Admiral Kirby, because he's not doing you any favors.
Oh, yeah. Kick Kirby to the curb. Kirby needs to hit the curb.
What do you mean he's being positive? We're creating peace in Syria.
He thinks we should be embarrassed for asking the obvious questions. So, there you have it, everybody. Happy New Year from Alternate Current Radio.
Happy New Year.
That's right. Daniel Spaulding coming from South Korea giving us Happy New Year, because he's already there. You're already in it, man.
No, not yet.
Well, it's New Year's Eve. You're almost there.
Yeah, New Year's Eve. Still got, you know, another, what's we got? Another 10 hours to go.
Another 10 11 hours. Dude, you,
10, 11 hours. Yeah.
You can have yourself quite a party in the next 10 hours, man. We want to hear from you tomorrow. We want to know what happened in South Korea, if you're not in a South Korean prison by the time you wake up and celebrating.
I want to go have some cocktails with Kim Jong-un tonight.
Oh,
wow. That's very impressive.
I knew it. North Korea is in charge here. I should have known. All right, everybody. We're going to shut down the boiler tonight. I want to thank Daniel Spaulding. Thanks for being here tonight, man.
Thanks for having me for this. And here's to another year.
Cheers. And here's to another year of fine Boiler Room episodes. Everybody keep coming back. We're going to keep doing Boiler Room. Spore, thank you for being here and being such a lovely co-host this year.
Oh, thanks for having me be your co-host. It's been awesome. I want to thank you all for listening and joining in our chat room, and for all of you that are emailing us. Sorry, I'm not really good at getting back to those quickly, but we really appreciate everything you're saying and your support here.
Yeah, that's right. You can always contact us. We're available over at Alternate Current Radio. We got a chat room in there. You can email us. We've got some big things coming out. We're going to totally revamp the website in 2016. We've got some actual physical events going on in 2016 that you can come out to and join us. So stay tuned. There's a lot more coming in 2016. I want to thank all the listeners out at Spreaker.com, all the listeners at AlternateCurrentRadio.com, 21stCenturyWire.com. Big, big Boiler Room thanks to all of our regulars and people that have chimed in this year on Boiler Room. Big ups to Patrick Henningsen, Sean Helton, the rest of the crew over at 21st Century Wire. Big high five to Jay Dyer from jaysanalysis.com. Go check out jaysanalysis.com. What a wealth of information and fun. I mean, geez, there's so many alternative, quote-unquote alternative media sites that just have no fun involved. And you know what? If you can't have any fun with this stuff, then you're missing out, you know. You may be headed down the wrong road. Big thanks to Bronco Malik from Cali Tribune. Big thanks to Andy Nowicki from Alt-Right Blogspot. Who else? Who am I forgetting? I don't even throw
Joe
it.
Joe Biggs.
What's that?
Joe Biggs.
Yeah.
Don't even say
doing everything he can to hide in a Texas bush and make sure ISIS members don't come get ya.
He's introducing his new iPhone app that will alert you if there's an ISIS cell near you.
Oh, I hope you listeners are finding the humor in this, because that is really funny. Oh, man. Who else? Geez, I'll even throw it out to Roman Bernard and Ryan G and some of those other anti-heroes we've had on this year. Big thanks to anyone who's come on the show. I know I'm forgetting a couple people, but thanks to everybody who's called in, everybody who's hung out in the chat room, everybody who has shared our posts. Yeah, Savvy. I mean, geez, we've had all kind of Jennifer Sodini. All kind of people. We've got a really great crowd going here at Boiler Room, and we appreciate all of you that want to call in, all of you that have been members on the show, members in the chat room, etc. Thank you, and Happy New Year from Alternate Current Radio. I'm your host, Hesher, and we are signing out. We'll see you next week in the new year.
Patrick Henningsen, host of the Sunday Wire, and you are tuned into AlternateCurrentRadio.com. That's